fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Hey, it's a Monday. Greatest day of the entire week, man. Back at it after another weekend. It was a great weekend, too. Little Voice of Reason and I spending a little time together. Mrs. Voice of Reason headed out of town for some business, so got to spend some time with the kiddo, which was always a lot of fun. Don't get to do that nearly as much as what I'd like to do, especially with all the days that we're on the radio doing the thing. But it was great to have it. Great weekend, and we're back at it, ready to go. And what a big weekend it is. We have, I don't know, appropriation bills we're going to vote on in Washington, D.C. We have Super Tuesday tomorrow. We had big news come out today. Already kicking off. And I told you, 2024, man, strap in, buckle up, and let's have some fun. Hold on tight, because it's going to be a wild ride throughout the year. Got a big show lined up. Obviously, there's some big news from the Supreme Court we'll get to momentarily. We will break down the Super Tuesday outlook that's coming up tomorrow. We had another primary over the weekend with Washington, D.C. Nikki Haley finally winning her first one. We'll see if that trend continues going into tomorrow. But I don't want to waste any time. We have a great guest on the line, and we're going to kick off the program for the first day of the week right out of the gate, man.
What's trending today?
As you know, we're on the campaign trail. We see Biden right now on the campaign trail. He's reformed his Bidenomics push just a little bit to where it's not technically being called Bidenomics. He's now doing his tour known as the Investing in America tour, where he's talking about all the great investments that he's done throughout the country over the past 3 years. And we can see how well it's worked out with, you know, inflation sitting up near 20% over the past 3 years. Food alone is at 30% across the nation over the past 3 years. So I'm so glad that it's worked out well. Thank you, Joe Biden, for increasing the price of, well, everything on us. And it's only going to get worse as we get into summertime now that gas prices are already climbing again. But I don't know if you're aware or not, coming up on Thursday is the State of the Union address. Oh, I know. It's already here, right? Are you ready for it?
Say what?
I don't know that we are, because he really, I don't know what he's going to say other than trying to make it a campaign speech about how bad the other guy is and then what he's going to try and do in office for the next 3 years if he's able to make it that long. So what's on the slate for it? And has he even proposed a budget for the next year while we're still working on this year's budget 6 months into our fiscal year? To talk about so much of this and a heck of a lot more, really happy to have back on the program. As you know, they're great partners with us here on this program, which you can find them at prosperityispossible.com. But he is the Vice President for Americans for Prosperity, the man himself, Mr. Akash Shogali. Akash, how are you, my friend?
I am good. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's so good to chat with you. You guys are doing a major campaign right now, showing how ridiculous this movement is. And with this new Investing in America tour that Joe Biden's doing, I don't know how many people are buying it and thinking that it's great that we've invested in all these programs, but yet my groceries are up 30% and three times higher than what they used to be before he took office. I don't know if that's a winning argument for them.
No, you're exactly right. He calls it investing in America. The average American calls it trillions and trillions of dollars in wasteful spending. The inflation crisis, all the, you know, the debt, all these things that we're facing, all of this is Bidenomics. If you notice, the president and his team have not used that phrase Bidenomics in months now after, you know, he said he would own it and he was happy to have the label. Well, what we're doing is we actually purchased Bidenomics.com. Yes, the White House is full of Gen Z TikTokers who live online. They forgot to purchase Bidenomics.com. And so Americans for Prosperity has purchased that web address. And on that website, you can find Rhetoric Versus Reality, us setting the record straight on what Bidenomics is, how the president is misleading the country, and how his policies have caused the inflation crisis that's plaguing so many families.
I love it. Now, they started backing off, and I have to give you guys credit, as I have for so many issues right now, that you guys came out with the push against Bidenomics way back last summer, and that's when they started backing off on this, because the truth started to come out about how bad the economy actually was under Joe Biden when you started talking about it. So now they don't even like to mention the word Bidenomics and then purchasing the web domain to give people the real truth. Even if they don't know the details, they know something's up, because it's just more stress to try and live on a daily basis. This gives the real information of what's really going on, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. The American people don't need us to tell them that, you know, they're not feeling good about the economy. 59% of Americans say they feel anxious, frustrated, or angry when they go grocery shopping. You and I both know why that is. We've talked to millions and millions of Americans this year. I myself have been out to events, talk to talked to a mom a couple of years ago who said that she is having to choose each week between a full tank of gas or diapers for her baby because she could only afford one or the other. I talked to a couple who used to go out to date night dinners once a month. They stopped doing that because restaurant prices have gotten so expensive. And so while they don't need us to tell them how they're feeling, what we're doing is telling them why things are the way that they are, reminding them that it's the trillions and trillions of dollars in reckless spending, the tens of thousands of pages in regulations and special interest handouts that Joe Biden pushed through and wanted to own Bidenomics, as well as, you know, all the Democrats who voted for these policies. That's what's causing the pain that they're in.
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse as the year goes on, which is weird, Akash, because normally during an election season, they'll do what they can to try to inflate the, you know, just inflate the economy by injecting more money in, printing money. They try to use some of the oil reserves to try and lower prices for gas during an election time to say, oh, look, the economy's great. Again, the whole, these aren't the droids you're looking for mentality, because that's what they do during an election year to make themselves look good. They've kind of already shot that shot because they've done that for the past few years just to maintain. It's only going to get worse this year, and it's not going to bode well for them during the campaign during the last few months, is it?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure they'll find other ways. The president is trying to do this with a student loan bailout. I'm sure you saw the other day that he signed another executive order into action with student loan bailout, and is actually planning to, and I believe he did this last week, email the beneficiaries with an email from Joe Biden basically saying, I forgave your debt. I mean, this is basic vote-buying class warfare stuff from the Democrats, and so we expect to see more of that. But at the end of the day, the American people aren't out for vengeance against the rich. What they want is a fair shot to make ends meet, climb the socioeconomic ladder, build the American dream for themselves and their kids, and we're showing them how Bidenomics has put that further out of reach for them.
Yeah, it's not working well. They can tell us all about the investments they did for climate change initiative, but at the end of the day, we still want to be able to buy groceries and fill up our gas tank at the same time and not have to choose which one that we're doing here. Let's go to the State of the Union address on Thursday this week. What do you anticipate Joe Biden's going to say during this speech? Because, again, I don't know what else he can say to try and hype himself up except for blatant lies that they've tried to say that, you know, they've created the 13 million jobs since COVID-19 and all this other garbage that we know are just flat out lies.
No, that's exactly right. He'll point to statistics that make it seem like the economy is doing well, right? Job creation, much of which is job recovery, wage growth not adjusted for inflation. He'll say inflation is better than it was a year ago, but of course a year ago it was already elevated from 2 years of reckless spending. And so they'll point to these, you know, line graphs and snippets in time, but that's not how the American people live their lives. That's not how they budget for their family. What they do is take a holistic view of how they're doing, and they're going to think about how they're doing today compared to how they were doing when he took office. And so I think we're going to see more kind of misleading narratives about Bidenomics. I think you're going to see more class warfare, more plans for giveaways, more plans to attack the rich, attack businesses. And then, frankly, of course, you're going to see a contrast with Donald Trump. But again, whether it's a question about Donald Trump or Joe Biden is not what we're interested in. What we're interested in is making sure people know that President Biden's agenda and the Democrats who voted for it are the ones who are to blame for the inflation crisis that they are ticked off about.
Yeah, and it's an absolute disaster. We're talking with Akash Shogali. He's the Vice President for Americans for Prosperity. You can find their information at prosperityispossible.com. You can also check out the new website, Bidenomics.com, and go see what true economic numbers look like under the Biden administration. Let's talk about real quickly as well, along with the State of the Union address, we have the extension, the continuing resolution that happened last week to extend it for another couple weeks. We have the attempt vote that we could see here in the next week or so on 6 of the 12 appropriation bills from the House, which I have to admit, when we first passed them out of the House before the holidays, November, December-ish, some of them showed some decent cuts. It looked like we were trying to clean some things up, but the Senate said that they were mostly dead on arrival. Do you see any major financial reforms coming out of this Congress before election season this year?
I don't. My hope is this, basically, that, you know, I think they're going to end up with another continuing resolution, which, based on that debt limit deal, folks might remember last summer that McCarthy, you know, extracted out of Joe Biden, frankly, did a good job of that negotiation. There are across-the-board cuts if a continuing resolution goes to the end of the year. I think that's kind of the least bad scenario. But what I'm hoping to see longer term is progress made on more systemic federal budget reforms. One of the things that's up for discussion right now is a fiscal commission, a debt commission, bipartisan, bicameral House and Senate to really boil down and drive solutions on the national debt. Now, you might roll your eyes, and your listeners understandably are going to roll their eyes at another Washington commission that's going to pump out a white paper and no one's going to care. But frankly, we're so far up the creek on the national debt, and most members of Congress are so unwilling to even have this conversation about what it takes to reform it, that even that commission coming up with constructive ideas that could be considered next Congress, that is even a step in the right direction. I think things like that, reforming how the federal budget process works, these are the conversations we want to drive this year while mitigating the damage that's been done for the past few years.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to. We haven't had a set actual federal budget since, what, the Bush administration? Since Obama, we haven't even passed one. It's been the omnibus package. It's been a continuing resolution. So I guess any movement in the right direction may be small, but it's substantial compared to what we've seen over the past few years. Not to mention, we still need, I think, to pass this Government Shutdown Prevention Act that was originally put up by James Lankford out of Oklahoma, because I'm sick and tired of hearing about either you pass this massive omnibus bill that we don't know what's in it, or else people are going to die in the streets because they're not going to get their health care coverage. I mean, that's what we've had for the last how many decades now, Akash?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You put to a great bill, the Preventing Government Shutdowns Act, that's Senator Lankford. Conservatives should be sick and tired of these sort of false choices where it's either you vote against government funding and the government shuts down, or else you vote for this absolute train wreck omnibus, you know, $2 trillion package with a bunch of Christmas tree nonsense thrown into it. It's a false choice, and we shouldn't be forced for our members of Congress to make that choice. The Preventing Government Shutdowns Act keeps government at the level of debt. It has built-in, you know, sort of minor cuts and incentives for Congress to get its act together. But these shutdown fights never end up victories for conservatives. We never end up cutting spending. We never end up getting the policy wins that we fight for, whether it's, you know, President Trump had a government shutdown over the border wall. There was a shutdown over defunding Obamacare back in 2013. They never get, conservatives never get the policy victory that they fight for. They never get the spending cuts that they fight for. And then they almost always end up shouldering the political blame as, of course, spending just rises and rises and rises throughout the entire process. And so we've got to kind of flip the whole table upside down, fix the federal budget process. And while that's not going to happen this year, we can certainly make significant progress in advancing that conversation. I think that's the best we can do while Joe Biden is in the White House and Democrats control the Senate.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got just about a minute left here, Akash, but are you optimistic this stuff is going to start going through, whether it's the end of this year before the election or going into next year, if we can hopefully see some Republican majorities in both chambers and a presidency, could we start seeing some actual changes for this fiscal movement?
Yeah, I do. I don't know that we're going to get massive transformations next year, but, you know, there's that first 100 days of a new administration. I think much of this, frankly, is reliant on who is the president, how much stock do they put in cutting spending, reforming the federal budget. I'm not optimistic about Donald Trump or Joe Biden, frankly, when it comes to federal spending, but hopefully our leaders in Congress take that challenge seriously, because it is spending that has made people's lives miserable with this inflation crisis.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be up to Congress to do it. I think if Donald Trump's in office, he's willing to sign it. It's not going to be initiated from him, but I think that he'd be willing to work with the Republicans if they start doing something drastic on that, or at least conservatives in some way, shape, or form. Bidenomics.com. Go and check out the website. It is the VP of Americans for Prosperity, Akash Shogali. Akash, thanks for coming on the program again, my friend. Always great. Keep up the fight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it.
Hey, always a pleasure right there. There it is. The man himself, Akash Shogali, VP for Americans for Prosperity. Lots more coming up on the show. Stay right here for The Voice Reason.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
I gotta say, that's probably one of the coolest things I've ever seen here, is purchasing the web domain for the campaign that they're trying to run on the other side of the aisle. That's pretty awesome, I gotta admit.
That is the most metal thing I ever heard in my whole life.
Yeah, welcome again. Thanks again to Akash Shogali coming on the program, VP for Americans for Prosperity on that national level. I gotta say, and I've said this on the radio before, right now, with the state of the Republican Party that we're in, I almost trust AFP from the sense of actually campaigning properly, getting the message out, actually trying to let people know what's going on, trying to help out certain candidates across the nation. I trust them more than I do the actual Republican Party. Republican Party continues to eat themselves up inwardly, and we don't have time for that. We got to get you-know-what done, and we got to do it right now because we are in a major election cycle, and we can't worry about the bickering internally, which, by the way, we do have Ronna McDaniel stepping down at the end of this week after Super Tuesday. This weekend she'll be done, so we need to figure out who that new chair will be for the party. All right, let's get into what's trending here. What do you say?
What's trending today?
So big news, obviously, of the day has been the decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Donald Trump making a statement just recently talking about this decision from 9-0 from the Supreme Court, saying that, yeah, the state of Colorado, not allowed to do that, bro. Not allowed to try and take him off the ballot. That doesn't work too well. That's not the way the Constitution or the founding fathers had intended things to work. So sorry, you can't just remove somebody because you don't like them on the ballot. And Donald Trump making a bold statement afterwards.
I want to start by thanking the Supreme Court for its unanimous decision today. It was a very important decision. We're very well crafted, and I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs. And they worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
Can I just say that I've missed the Donald Trump-isms that he does now? This was off the cuff. If you didn't watch the video, it's on social media. It's on the news where I think it's at Mar-a-Lago. I'm guessing. I don't know. It's someplace that looks really fancy. He has a couple American flags, and he just walks out in front of the camera and just starts going off and just did his thing. I love the Donald Trumpisms.
What Donald Trump really meant to say.
We haven't had a chance to use that in a while, but yeah, it was a very long, very rigorous process that frankly took, was really quick. But
worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly.
I love it. They worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly. Nonetheless, a 9-0 decision with some of the most progressive Supreme Court justices that we've had on there that was nominated by Barack Obama on this court is pretty astounding. And it shows that that's pretty much a clear cut and dry decision from the constitutional interpretation from both sides of the aisle on this, that he hasn't been charged with an insurrection, that while he may have some federal civil cases against him, I guess, that he's not charged with anything. So how can you remove somebody off a ballot when they haven't been charged with anything? This should be a clear cut and dry. This sent a message, a ripple wave in the lake right now. This sent a ripple wave across the political landscape that this is not acceptable, that this is not okay. And this is good news. This is good news. This is hopefully somewhat uniting for us to realize, okay, maybe we've gone a little bit too far with the rhetoric here. Maybe we've gone just a little bit too far with the messaging about how Donald Trump actually is and how bad and evil and terrible and fascist and Nazi and homophobic and racist and everything else that he is. Maybe we've taken this just a little bit too far. Let's get back to some rational reality here. Do you think that actually happened? Do you think that really happened? No. The Democrats losing their minds over this one. The meltdown has begun because the Supreme Court has essentially sided saying that Donald Trump cannot be removed off the ballot unless, here was the stipulation on it, it said it's not the duty and the role of the state, it was actually a duty of Congress. And if Congress votes to decide to remove him off the ballot, that's one thing. But it's not something that the states can do individually. The ultimate meltdown, to the point we're hearing that they need to abolish and dissolve the Supreme Court because they didn't vote their way. The fascists, angry about not removing the quote-unquote fascist off the ballot, in a fascist dictatorial type of way. Oh, the irony. You can cut it with a butter knife. Lots more coming up on the show. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason Meets Radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Essentially, you cannot take somebody out of a race because an opponent would like to have it that way. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it's the leading candidate, whether it was the leading candidate or a candidate that was well down on the totem pole. You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that. And the Supreme Court saw that very well. And I really do believe that will be a unifying factor because while most states were thrilled to have me, there were some that didn't, and they didn't want that for political reasons. They didn't the poll numbers, because the poll numbers are very good.
That was Donald Trump. That was the statement made shortly after the Supreme Court made their decision earlier today, 9-0, trying to keep him on the ballot, saying, yeah, states, you're not allowed to do what you tried to do, which, by the way, Super Tuesday, Colorado, Maine, a couple of those states that are on the docket for tomorrow, and those are the couple of states that were working to try and remove him off of there. So, of course, the meltdown has begun, saying from the left side of the aisle that you're not allowed to be doing that. You're not allowed to just remove somebody off there because you deem them to be evil and bad because they differ politically than what you want. It's a fascinating conversation to be had for sure. So I agree. I think it could be unifying, at least in the sense that it's unifying in the law. It's not unifying in the political sense where they're, of course, already trying to twist it. We'll do that here in just a moment. Some of the other news that I find interesting, if you missed
What's trending today?
If you missed it. There was another primary that happened over the weekend, and it was the great state, the great city, I guess, the region, the district of Washington, D.C. They're trying to make it a state, which really blows my mind because I don't know if you're aware. Show of hands, how many people know exactly how many delegates are in Washington, D.C.? There are 19 delegates in Washington, D.C. 19! I don't know why. When a whole 2,000 Republicans ended up showing up to vote. Now, that's small, obviously. I live in the state of Kansas, and we have more than 2,000 people show up in a Republican presidential primary, which ours is coming up on the 19th, I believe, of March. So we're a few weeks away after Super Tuesday. The race will essentially be over by then, so maybe we won't. Maybe we won't get 2,000 people to show up because it'll pretty much be done by then. But we still want to have our say to say, yes, we want Donald Trump as the candidate based on our electoral votes. So, we don't have 19 delegates in Kansas, but 19 delegates in the state of in the district of Washington, D.C. And you know why they're doing it is because they want it to be a state. They've been pushing that for a long time. They've been pushing the whole idea for the statehood of Washington, D.C. for a while because, three different states kind of blend into the area of Washington, D.C. within city limits, and they're just kind of there, but yet they want to have their own say, which I find kind of fascinating and kind of interesting. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it actually is. And they want it to be a state for the sole purpose that if they do become a state, what happens? They get two more Senate seats. And could you imagine what side of the aisle that they're going to be on if Washington, D.C. became an actual state? Oh, yeah, more than likely would probably become Democrats, as it's run by a Democrat mayor, a large number of Democrats in that area. Obviously, when only 2,000 Republicans show up for the primary that happened, and it was about a 60-30-ish, 60-40 vote for Nikki Haley, which, just throwing this out there, Nikki Haley, if you're trying to not be the Washington, D.C. establishment individual, then you probably don't want to win Washington, D.C. Not that there's not good conservatives in the Washington, D.C. area, because there are, but that doesn't look good in the persona when you're looking at trying to be the outsider. You don't want the support from people there. And again, you could be a great conservative and you're trying to battle it from behind enemy lines. And if you do, I salute you to the nth degree, my friend, trying to battle in Washington. But usually, I mean, that's her big victory. That's her one win. It's not even a state, but just a district that has 19 delegates, which does bring up, by the way, the numbers to she's at 43 delegates now. Donald Trump sitting at 244, 9 with Ron DeSantis, 3 at Vivek Ramaswamy, both of those guys out. Obviously, so Donald Trump leading 244 to 43. You need 1,215 to officially win the nomination, which you could potentially get here in the next couple weeks. We'll break down more of the Super Tuesday numbers tomorrow on Super Tuesday and have that ready for you. But Nikki Haley, if you want to look like you're not the D.C. swamp type of person, maybe winning Washington, D.C. is not the great one big victory that you should probably have on that docket. So that's her look. There's a rumor now that with how badly she's losing, that she's looking at a third-party option. Now, she said this early on in the race, that she doesn't want to have a third-party option. She wants to be a Republican. She is a Republican. She's a conservative. That's what she tells us on the campaign trail. But she's a conservative, and that she wants to be the Republican nominee, and she does not want to run third-party. With how badly she's losing, however, having D.C. being the only area that she's actually won and winning those 19 delegates from Washington, D.C., we'll see how Super Tuesday goes tomorrow, and we'll do our speculation on the program tomorrow for Tuesday. But I am guessing that Donald Trump's going to wipe the floor with her and probably win all 15 of the states tomorrow. if not, it's going to be, you know, 13 or 14 of the states, but I guess it's going to be all 15 for the most part, in which case there's really no pathway to victory for Nikki Haley, which begs the question then on how desperate she is to be a nominee and how badly she really, really, really hates Donald Trump. She said she was a Republican before, and she said this early on in the race, to where I'm a Republican, I'm going to stay a Republican, and if I don't win the Republican nominee, then I won't run third party. She said that early on, but that was before the announcement of someone like Ronna McDaniel stepping away from the RNC chair. And when Ronna McDaniel was more favorable to someone like a Nikki Haley, which is why they've tried to distance themselves from the Donald Trump campaign, you do your thing, we won't technically support you until after the convention in June when we actually make it official. Like, I get that at a normal basis in a normal situation, but we're not in a normal situation right now, are we? We're in a different situation where Donald Trump is a former president. He is still winning with over three quarters of Republican support in just about every state, both poll-wise and when it comes to some of the actual primaries that we've seen so far. He wins hands over Nikki Haley. This is right now a MAGA Donald Trump Republican Party, whether people like that or not. We kind of have to come to that acceptance. So the RNC, if they were smart and if they would appropriate their money in a responsible manner, would throw support behind Donald Trump as the de facto candidate for the most part and prepare and run campaign ads as if Donald Trump was the candidate going after Joe Biden. That would be the smart thing to do. They're not, and Ronna McDaniel's because she's not necessarily a Donald Trump fan, which is why she said if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, which will be more presumptive after Super Tuesday tomorrow, that she's officially going to step down by this weekend, which leaves open a seat. If that seat, depending on who it goes to, if it goes to a more Trump-supporting individual like supposedly a Laura Trump, Eric Trump's wife, who is a business individual who said that she would support Donald Trump, obviously wholeheartedly, and who would do the campaign donations and the fundraising to try and build up a case to defend and help support and campaign with Donald Trump, that means the RNC mindset has shifted. And if the RNC, the Republican National Committee, goes from a kind of mentality of Donald Trump to, yeah, we're throwing our full support behind you because you're the de facto nominee right now, then there is no pathway for Nikki Haley, and she loses the support of the RNC that's kind of right now supporting her in a backhanded manner of way. And if that's the case, then does she feel like she's been betrayed by her party? Or right now, she's throwing some really heavy sledgehammers at Donald Trump. It's not really doing anything, but she's throwing some really hard slings at Donald Trump trying to go after him in the primary season. Does that entice her to leave the party? Because now there's rumor floating around that potentially she could be that lead ticket for the No Labels Party. Now, if you remember the No Labels Party, that was the Joe Manchin and Mitt Romney potential party right there, where they were going to run as the moderate Democrat, the moderate Republican that's more so on the left side of the aisle, working together, holding hands, singing Kumbaya, and bringing the country together and getting rid of the two-party system with the No Labels that really had no pathway to victory, which is why Joe Manchin ended up walking away. There's actually a different story behind that that I'll talk about after the break, but there's one of the reasons why Joe Manchin walked away from that opportunity was because there's really no pathway. They're not appealing to anybody in particular. Joe Manchin doesn't appeal to too many Democrats when they're on board with the Democrat Party. Mitt Romney definitely doesn't appeal to too many Republicans, except for maybe a few of the Never Trumper holdouts. But those Never Trumper holdouts right now are supporting Nikki Haley. But if Nikki Haley jumps on board with the No Labels Party, what would that do to the race? Because there are quite a few, there's about a third-ish of the Republican Party that does not like Donald Trump and that supports Nikki Haley right now, which is why we're seeing a, 65-35, 60-40 type of victory for Donald Trump in most of these races, because there is about a third of a holdout for Nikki Haley. And if they walked with her and went to that No Labels Party, I'm not trying to throw any concern here and cause for concern, but that could potentially be devastating for Donald Trump in the general election if she went third party. I don't know that she would. And she has said previously that she would not. But if she feels betrayed by the party that elects, whether it's Laura Trump or someone more that's more favorable to Donald Trump as the head of the RNC, and she doesn't get that type of support, and they start throwing support behind Donald Trump, she could feel betrayed. The question really is, how badly does she despise Donald Trump right now? Because she's making it sound like, at least on the campaign trail, that she hates his guts. And that could not be true. Maybe it's just the campaign style that she's trying to use, but she's trying to link him in with Joe Biden. And to me, I don't know about you, but trying to link Donald Trump in, or anybody for that matter, linking them and tying them and associating them with someone like Joe Biden is one of the worst degradations that you could possibly do. That's attacking on a low below the belt there. But if she's doing that, that tells me that she really, really, really does not like Donald Trump. And I don't know that she would do an endorsement even if she stuck with the Republican Party but ended up dropping out of the race. It might be one of those, like we saw with Ron DeSantis, where it was like, yeah, we worked hard and Donald Trump's going to be the nominee. And we'll just... It's kind of the backhanded endorsement that we got from Ron DeSantis. And I would more than likely expect that from Nikki Haley. But if she ran third party and kept that 30% of the Republican vote to go with her, it would be game over for Donald Trump. Put that in the back of your mind as a worst-case scenario, something that could happen. Now, RFK Jr. pulling from Democrats, Haley pulling from Republicans in an alternative race.
With Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Reason, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do on this program. It's always great to have you with us, especially kicking off a whole new week, a big week. It's going to be a big one, I'm telling you, my friends.
And I think we're going to make it bigly.
That's what we do. We have Super Tuesday tomorrow. We have the Supreme Court decision today. We have the State of the Union on Thursday. We have the retiring or stepping down of Ronna McDaniel on Saturday. It's just going to be a wild week, plus appropriation bills that could be voted on throughout this week and next. So strap in, buckle up, and let's have some fun on those. Speaking of the Supreme Court decision today, the left, ultimate meltdown, man. I mean, this was common sense. We knew it was going to be this way. We knew it was going to be a majority. The question was, would there be one or two progressive holdouts that would vote the other way for a political message as opposed to actually looking at what the Constitution really says? This is common sense. But the other side, they were adamant, man. The delusional world that they live in is mind-boggling. There was an individual on CNN earlier today, Jamie Raskins. He was part of the January 6th committee, elected official in D.C. And he was on there ready to go, ready to take that next step. Because remember, a 9-0 decision is supposed to be a pretty unifying message. Everybody across the board, even the most progressive ones, Sonia Sotomayor and all these other individuals, they even said, yeah, states can't be removing people off the ballot. You can't be doing that. This was Jamie Raskin, I don't know, about a year or so ago, a couple years ago, when he was on CNN talking about trying to remove Trump and what he thought the Supreme Court would do by removing him because of how tyrannical he is.
We've been saying all along that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment presents a clear and unequivocal statement that anyone who has sworn an oath of office, and by the way, not just a president, but members of Congress and others who hold federal office, who engage in insurrection or rebellion, having sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, can never serve again in federal or state office. Donald Trump is disqualified.
All right. So that was a while ago. That wasn't today. That was a while ago before the decision. That was when it first went to the Supreme Court, or that was when they were doing their whole January 6th committee information. That was Jamie Raskin, the progressive Democrat on CNN, saying that. After the decision today, when they're like, yeah, you can't really use that argument for the state to be able to remove him off the ballot. You can't do that. They asked him today what he thought as a recap, and this is what he said.
Well, the court didn't exactly disagree with it. They just said that they're not the ones to figure it out. It's not going to be a matter for judicial resolution under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, but it's up to Congress to enforce it. I disagree with that interpretation just because the other parts of the 14th Amendment are self-executing. People can go to court and say that something violates equal protection, even if there's not a federal statute that allows them to do that. But in any event, the Supreme Court punted and said it's up to Congress to act. And so I am working with a number of my colleagues, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Eric Swalwell, to revive legislation that we had to set up a process by which we could determine that someone who committed insurrection is disqualified by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And the House of Representatives already impeached Donald Trump for participating in insurrection by inciting it. So the House has already pronounced upon that, and there was also a 57-43 vote in the Senate. The question is whether Speaker Mike Johnson would allow us to bring this to the floor of the House.
There you go. Audio from CNN. So what should have been a unifying message, a slap in the face that said, yeah, no, you can't do that. At least states are not allowed to do what they did with the attorney or with the Secretary of State. The Attorney General is trying to remove someone off a presidential ballot because of a quote unquote insurrection that they haven't even been charged with and that's not on their record, that you can't remove them off the ballot in that sense. A unifying voice from both sides of the aisle. They're relentless. They're desperate. And, oh, they're already working on, apparently, a bill to essentially remove him to be voted on in Congress or some type of committee to investigate on what the stipulations are to qualify for being removed from a ballot because of an insurrection that takes place, because that's what they've labeled it as, an insurrection, even though it was known as, quote unquote, a mostly peaceful protest. Nonetheless, they're trying desperately to try and find a new way. What was supposed to be a unifying message has now become more politicized than ever because they are desperate to keep Donald Trump away. I'm wondering, with this type of angry, hateful, violent rhetoric that they're coming out with, that there's no way he's allowed to be president again, and every whatever it is, the ends justify the means, no matter what it entails. With that type of rhetoric, could we see a new January 6th to prevent the inauguration of Donald J. Trump if he ends up winning the election in November? And to them, it wouldn't be an insurrection. It would be a prevention of tyranny taking over the nation, so therefore totally justified, totally all right for you to do that, to try and take it to the next level of what would be an insurrection. It's going to be more politicized. The rhetoric's going to get more violent. Get prepared for it, because it's going to be a rocky year of them doing anything possible. Back at it again tomorrow for a Super Tuesday. Until then, everybody have a great day. Be the catalyst for change. Be that voice of reason. We'll see you on the radio.